Today is Monday, August 5th, and you are listening to The Job. The Job.
This is The Job, a talk show about art, design, music, business, culture in Portland. I am your host and your friend, Ray. Our guest on this episode 24 is Marion Rose Lucas, an artist, bookkeeper, and proprietor of Magnolia Management. But first, why don't we just talk to Needmore Studio Director Candace. Hi, Candace.
Hi, Ray.
Lovely shirt.
Hey, thanks.
Floral in nature.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually got it for you.
Did you?
For me,
oh,
for your pleasure.
Right, I was going to say. Yeah. It's not going to fit me.
No.
So it's new. I went down to our new space today and to talk to an electrician. That was fun. Such a charmer.
That is so exciting, though. So you got to see the space with that big circular office knocked out.
Yeah.
How does it feel?
Nice. It feels much bigger.
Yeah. Too big?
No.
God,
perfect. No, never too big. We're too big for our britches. I didn't bring the tape measure, but I can tell you that the length of the conference room is 14 dress shoes.
14 dress shoes, great.
That's all I know.
So when we try to get someone to build that conference table, we'll just give them that
technical. Here's my shoe. Try not to exceed 10 shoes in length.
There seems to be this thing. Okay, so we've never had a conference room properly before.
Yeah.
But as we were looking for new spaces, it feels like the conference table is this real source of pride for everyone. Like everywhere we looked, there was a story behind like what Doug fir they cut down to make this conference table or
what
flagpole was hand chiseled by babies for unicorns. This one.
Whittled by unicorn horns.
Yes. So I'm starting to feel like a lot of pressure about this conference
table. God, the room's not that big. And let me tell you, I realized when I was in there today where you wanted to put that display on the wall, the door's going to hit it. I think we might have to bring the smaller TV down there.
Okay.
Or put it on the sidewall.
The display that we have to show websites on right now is the size of a large man, and I feel like if we could cut that down a bit and still be absolutely fine.
Yeah, it's huge.
There's no reason for that.
I just don't. Anyway,
okay.
I don't want to get into that.
No. So this was a beautiful weekend in Portland. We got to visit our friends at the Farm Cafe.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
That was amazing. I'm just going to say right now that the trout dinner at the Farm is amazing.
Yeah, it's really good.
Amazing. Go right now and get it.
People have been doing really cool things with trout lately.
I never really...
And deviled eggs. I don't know. They're just
deviled
like the
eggs
things
and trout.
Now. They made like this salmon deviled egg that was...
With a lamb bacon.
Oh,
by the
what
way.
The hell?
The
Where
other,
is this stuff coming? Who's... Yeah.
The other place that does trout really, really well in Portland is... Is it Chico?
Yeah.
How do you say that?
I think we did say it that way.
Chico. Okay.
Yeah.
So
we were
places.
We were hip to that by Dan.
Yeah.
He loves that place. It's right by his house.
And is it at the Woodsman? Is it trout in Crazy Water? Is another wonderful trout? I think that trout is this unsung hero of fish that I've just discovered.
Yeah.
There's somewhere else that we had. There's a fourth. I can't remember where. But
you know what I did today?
What?
Going to meet the electrician. I dressed up in a suit. Why?
Yeah,
I don't know. And then I had to ride the Max because we didn't have another car. That was incredibly awkward.
What? Just being in a suit? Did you...
People in suits do not ride the Max.
Yeah.
At least not at like 10 a.m.
actually do the Job thing where you're like the guy in the $10,000?
No, these people would not have found it funny.
Yeah. I don't know that anyone has found it funny all day except you and I, but it's been good.
No.
It's good for us.
No, it was really awkward.
Oh, why? I mean,
people
just
act,
for you.
People act seriously differently toward you. Like, normally I do not dress up.
Yeah. Right. Maybe you were feeling awkward wearing a suit, but actually nobody was treating you any different. Is that possible?
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, what happened?
Anthropologist.
What? Okay, so tell me, what happened that you thought was different?
Just people were looking at me differently, like, oh, holy shit, there's a guy with a suit. They'd look around like, what, am I going to get busted?
And so if
and this is, admittedly, this is on 82nd Avenue MAX station.
Sure, but if you had been wearing, like, jeans and...
Like midday, randomly.
Jeans and a t-shirt, and someone looked at you exactly like that, what would you have assumed they were thinking?
I don't know. I don't think they would have. People don't look at me twice when I'm not wearing a suit. Just like some dude on the bus, you know, like, whatever.
You get no respect at all.
Well, I don't need respect on the Mac. I'm just leave me alone. I'm fine. I like seek respect elsewhere in life.
So your you said that your goal was when we moved into the new space, which is in about a month.
Oh yeah.
That you would be wearing a suit every day.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
A suit every day, or just not jeans?
Except like casual Fridays.
Yeah. Are we going to have casual Fridays?
We're going to have to, so I don't have to wear a suit.
Yeah. Got to pick a day.
Yeah. No, I plan to wear suits more often. That is correct.
Yeah.
You know...
I am in favor of this. I'm a big fan of the suits. Got to say. They're great.
It's fine. I just need to not ride the Max in them.
You are, my guess is that this is like your first day of wearing a suit to the studio, and you are probably holding yourself you were self-conscious, and maybe what people are reacting to is that.
Maybe.
And that, like, after you've worn a suit every day.
You have
day
no idea. So after that, I went and I got a burger.
Yeah.
A Bijou burger at the Bijou.
Oh, so good. Jealous.
So messy. Come on. Like I said, I ordered the burger. And the woman looked at me, and then she sat down a pile of napkins next to me. Like, like the guy in the $1,000 suit, you know, ordered the juiciest, messiest burger. I was so paranoid. I, like, leaned over like a hunchback, like, eating this burger. Like, I was just so neurotic. Like, I'm so bad with food. It's really weird at the bar.
It's probably you then. After a month of wearing that suit like every day, get back on the Max and you'll probably realize like nobody even notices.
Yeah, that could be.
I don't know.
Also, I just need a haircut. Anyway, Marion Rose Lucas is our guest today. She is an artist. Bookkeeper and proprietor of Magnolia Management. She's here to tell you a little about her inspiration and to help you figure out how to run your business better and make more money. So, without further ado, let's talk to Marion. Hi, Marion.
Hi.
How are you?
Just fine. How are you?
I'm good. So, let's start at the beginning. Where are you from?
I was born in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Raised in Georgia.
And then you came back to Portland area.
Mm-hmm.
I guess not really Portland, but...
Mm-hmm.
So, tell me about... how long were you in Georgia?
Until I was 19. So, that's where I went to high school and...
Spent your formative years.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Like, what part of Georgia?
North Georgia.
Okay. And how are you liking... Well, you don't really live in Portland. Where do you actually live?
Sheridan, which is outside McMinnville.
Okay. And what brought you to Sheridan specifically?
We had some friends that bought a farm down there, and we fell in love with it. And then their next-door neighbor... began renting out their house, and so we moved.
Well, that is awesome. how many animals share your home with you?
Let's see. 5 are allowed in the house.
Okay. Wow, that's just the limit of the ones in the house.
And then we have chickens and ducks that only come into the house on accident.
Okay. They're shooed right back out. So you have kind of a lot of animals, huh?
Mm-hmm.
How did that start? Did you inherit some when you moved in, or is it just kind of...
We inherited one cat. When we had two dogs and two cats when we moved, and then a cat, a pregnant cat, came with the house.
Whoa. Oh, hello.
Unbeknownst to us. And, that was fun, because there was kittens.
Okay. And what else, what do you do out there? Everyone, like, I follow you on Instagram, so I see all sorts of crazy things about, like, you know, little projects you have going on there. Why don't you tell me about some of your projects?
Okay, let's see. We have a big garden,
okay,
and that takes up a lot of our time, and we have a greenhouse attached to that and a chicken coop and duck run, so tending to those guys takes up a good amount of our time. And then
a duck run, is that just like a penned in area?
Yeah. Okay. And it's part of the chicken coop, so the chickens and ducks all live together.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, that's where we spend most of our time.
Okay. So besides simply living in a house and having pets and animals, I definitely have known you for a while for your artwork. Why don't you describe your art for me? Where does that come from?
So I make paper collages, portraits often, but also just of whatever, houses, landscapes.
Okay.
And I guess I started doing that before moving to Portland, and then just kind of ran with it ever since I've been here, and it's been fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you get in the mood to do that? Is there like some kind of music you play, or is there a certain like area you have set up for that? Whatever. You know,
I've just kind of started making art again after not wanting to make anything for quite a while. Just this year, I started doing some more projects, and a lot of times it's just looking at the world around me and thinking that it would be fun to break it down into a two-dimensional piece of paper.
Right, right. Do you have like a favorite jam, or is there like a type of music you listen to get in that mood?
I mostly listen to country music.
Okay.
So that's kind of all the time, so not necessarily... I don't think I have a specific music I listen to when I'm working on art, but...
Right. Somehow, I don't know if I followed you on RDO for a while or something, but you had... I saw that you'd been listening to, like, it was like Chet Atkins, like old Chet Atkins, and I got that album and adore it. I, like, listen to that album all the time. Like, my kids know that album now.
I actually do like to work doing both bookkeeping and any kind of work that I'm doing. I like Chet Atkins a lot because it's instrumental,
right,
mostly.
Yeah, so exactly. You don't get distracted. Yeah.
I have to sing along with everything, and I do sing the guitar parts, but it's less distracting. Right. Than...
Because it's not words. I imagine it's like part of your brain is at least focused on work.
Right.
What art inspires you? Is there other sort of stuff that you are really into?
Yeah, I really like folk art. Probably one of my favorite artists is Howard Finster.
Okay.
He's probably most well known for some album covers that he did for the Talking Heads,
yeah,
and R.E.M.
Right, right.
But you can visit his Paradise Gardens, and it was pretty close to where I grew up, and so we go on field trips there, and
it's like got like just filled with all sorts of like weird,
oh, it's so crazy,
little...
he was just crazy. I mean, the whole yard, there's a church that he built out of all found materials laying around that he's painted with scripture and the ramblings of a madman, and he was a preacher and a banjo player. And before he died, when we would go on field trips or visit with our family, he was always there playing banjo on the front porch.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. And his art I really love. It's very simple, that clean lines, two-dimensional work.
I feel like maybe like R.E.M. shot a video or two there also. Was maybe where I've seen...
I wouldn't be surprised.
I think I've seen footage of it, or maybe it was just some random...
Yeah.
Just walking around and they were like... There's little like windmills everywhere, and like yeah, like yeah.
It's really cool. If
how I imagine your house to be like. Is what I imagine I would see there. Is like,
it's getting there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, things are different in the country. You can get a little more creative with your, like in the city, you just get fined for that or something, you know. But
the aluminum cans start adding up, and right. Making art out of them only seems reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. When you come in, like you seem to come into Portland periodically, are there some things that you really look forward to when you come into Portland? I mean, besides seeing our smiling faces.
Yeah, it's mostly you.
Yeah. But I mean, like, are there restaurants or like things you just really like to do when you come here?
Yeah, definitely. We don't eat out much when we're home because the closest thing to us is Dairy Queen. So I thought when we moved out there that we would eat Dairy Queen an awful lot, but it turns out that the charm wears off fairly quickly.
I guess, yeah. Even the seasonal specials get old.
I know. We still do go to Dairy Queen, but most of our meals are at home. So, I eat most of my meals out when I'm here. So that is probably my favorite thing.
Yeah.
Trying new restaurants.
Yeah. Is there a restaurant you've tried lately that you're really into?
I really like the Bollywood Theater on Alberta.
Love that place.
Really good. Went there last time I was here. And
the interior of that place sounds a lot like what you're talking about. It's like so decorated and
yeah,
like
really eclectic. It's just,
yeah.
Yeah, I like that place, and I like Grain and Gristle a lot.
I've never been there yet.
It's on Prescott and 15th.
That's why I never get up there.
Yeah, yeah, that's the neighborhood I stay in when I'm here. So okay. I kind of, the Alberta and Northeast is where I go mostly.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. And then Ole Frijole. Love that place.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Favorite place to stop for coffee?
Okay, I like Bare Bones Cafe in Southeast. The reason for that is that I've encountered a lot lately where coffee shops don't have whipped cream anymore.
What?
They just don't. It's like four or five coffee shops in Portland that I've gone to. Like I like a mocha in the afternoon with whipped cream all over it.
Sure, sure.
You know, and no whipped cream. Like they they don't have it. And so that's one of the places that really, like, they put the whipped cream on top of it and then like chocolate shaky, you know, like they just go all out and let you indulge your sweet tooth. And I think a lot of the coffee shops around here want you to taste the coffee.
Yeah.
And they don't want you to have
they're hardcore.
Yeah, they're hardcore. They're like,
yeah.
So, they're which is cool. I like coffee, but you know, I also like whipped cream. So
right. Well, you know, if you're having a mocha, that's the place to go. Bare Bones Cafe. Is that?
It's on Belmont and 20th.
Yeah, yeah.
Ish.
Okay.
They have good breakfast sandwiches and stuff, like food, not pastries.
Right.
That's fun. Pastries. Also, of course, always Stumptown, and I like Ristretto too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you are not only an artist and lover of the country, I don't know what to say, but also a bookkeeper. How did that come about?
I've been doing bookkeeping pretty much since I started working.
Okay.
My first job was with an attorney, and I was her office manager, and I did her books. And then it just kind of grew from there. So for a long time. And I've been working for myself for about 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is I always just refer to you by your name, but what's the name of your business?
Magnolia Management.
Okay, gotcha. What kind of clients do you usually work with?
So all small businesses, mostly in Portland, a lot of creative companies. Artists and musicians and retail stores. It's kind of all over the board.
Mm-hmm.
But all small businesses.
When you say mostly Portland, are there like some in Sheridan, or you just mean like?
I have a couple in Sheridan, or not Sheridan, Beaverton and North Plains.
Gotcha.
Kind of in between here and Sheridan. I don't have any Sheridan clients. Mm-hmm. Sheridan doesn't have a lot of businesses.
Right. Not a big startup community.
No.
So how do you find clients? I mean, is it mostly word of mouth?
Yeah, it's been all word of mouth, which is really nice because it means you end up working with people that you like, which makes work fun.
Yeah.
So I've
and
been
you
really
save on
lucky.
Advertising, too, I
yeah,
suppose.
Yeah, I've never had to do any advertising, which has been nice.
Skip the Yellow Pages ad.
No Yellow Page ad for Magnolia Management. I don't take many new clients at this point, mm-hmm. so I'm kind of at capacity. But it's great because all my clients are friends of friends or
right
related.
Well, as they say, that's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
So, maybe be a little general here because I don't want you to give away any like industry secrets or you know because you work you're in confidence of a lot of people, but. Like, in general, is there some good advice you would give to businesses? Like imagine Needmore before we worked with you. Like, you know, it's a small, like, literally mom-and-pop shop or something. Like, what is a good step towards getting a bookkeeper?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because a lot of times, like, someone the other day just on Twitter was like, well, does anyone know how to use QuickBooks? And I'm just like, no, but I know how to find a good bookkeeper who does that for me. You know, like, besides finding a bookkeeper, what advice would you give, like, small businesses in Portland?
Well, there are good programs in Portland. Portland is a great place to start a business. There's lots of aid out there for you. So
okay.
Mercy Corps Northwest offers business classes, you know, kind of the basics of opening and starting a business and how to, you know, they teach classes on how to calculate your break-even point analysis and, you know, really good stuff for people who are trying to start a business. Lewis and Clark also has program, like all of the colleges around here often for the business majors have little programs available to the public to help them start businesses. And I would also just say, you know, figure out what you're good at and what you're not good at and hire somebody to do that stuff that you're not good at because it's worth it
right.
To not deal with that headache.
That is good advice. I mean, I read that early on. I think that helped us make the decisions to, like, retain professional help in a lot of areas where it was like at first it was like, well, I'll just roll up my sleeves and learn QuickBooks. It's like, boy... even if I enjoyed it,
right.
Which I do not, the amount of time it would take me to do something, you know, it was just like, well, you know, I think a good advice for small businesses is like, just calculate your hourly rate, just figure out what you're worth to your business and just be honest. Like, can someone do that for less or faster or whatever, you know, and maybe you should be spending your time going out and like pounding the pavement or finding new clients or something that's going to bring more value.
Yeah. Definitely.
I think it's hard to make that calculation. Maybe you have to kind of step outside of yourself and your ego and think about, you know, the point is to further the business and not just feel like you're... I think Americans especially have trouble growing past a small business because they have this Wild West kind of do-it-yourself, you know, like, oh, I'll handle everything.
Right. And, you know, you might be able to handle everything, but it doesn't mean that you should.
Right.
And I get a lot, when I was taking a lot of new clients, a lot of times the work that would come to me would be cleaning up prior year messes within the accounting programs that they were using. And so, you know, you pay for it eventually if you...
Right. Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's kind of like how I didn't pay my taxes for years and years and years, and then there was a day of reckoning. Basically, when I started a business, it was like,
I
should probably resolve that. Although I have to say, the IRS, they were really nice on the phone.
They're surprisingly friendly.
I felt like I was talking to my grandma. I thought she was going to send me cookies at the end of the...
Yeah, I've had really positive experience. You sometimes have to wait on hold for an ungodly amount of time.
Mm, yeah.
But once you actually speak with somebody, they tend to be pretty, you know, pretty nice. And they just want you to call. Like, if you owe the government a lot of money... They just want you to call them and acknowledge it and try to do something about it.
Yeah, and they were like surprisingly flexible.
Yeah.
So much so that I was like, well, why the heck did I wait so long? I mean, this is silly.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, on the plus side, I didn't have credit card debt, just IRS debt. So, okay, let's go. Let's bring it back to the farm.
Okay.
How do you find a balance between living pretty far out from the city and then having your clients and your stuff here? How do you manage that? Like, is that like 2 hours of driving every day, or?
No, so it actually works out really well. So I do most of my work from home, and then every other week I drive into Portland and meet with clients and pick up documents and receipts and bank statements, and then bring all of that home, compile the work, and then come back to meet or drop things off. So I come in and I spend about 3 days here,
okay,
of every other week, and then the other time I'm home, and I sure love that.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you? So I notice you're using a Mac.
Yes.
Good for you.
Thank you.
That you must obviously somehow use QuickBooks.
So I have Parallels on my computer. So I do, all of my tax software is Windows. I'm not aware of any company yet making it for Mac, at least on a large enough scale.
Mm-hmm.
And QuickBooks, the QuickBooks for Mac is actually very good now. It used to be terrible, but now it's pretty good. So I have both. So whatever one my client wants to use, that's the one that I use.
Yeah, I was always curious about that because, like, we used to struggle with that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously QuickBooks for Mac was, like, unusable,
right,
back then. And we're talking, you know, several years ago before we were working together. And so how long have you had a Mac now? Because you were on a PC
on a PC for a long time.
Has it been maybe a year on
the Mac?
I think
maybe a year. Maybe a little more, but about a year.
So do you still have, like, kind of issues or growing pains, or have is that kind of all smoothed out over time?
It's smoothed out. It's pretty, the only complaint I have about running both systems is that in Windows, the shortcuts don't always work.
Mm.
And it's very frustrating. So you have to, like, move your finger and click, is so hard.
That is frustrating, though.
Yeah, it's just so hard.
Well, no, I can totally relate to that. I'll go to any lengths to not have to pick up my mouse, even if it's right, like, literally half an inch in front of the keyboard. It just seems like, yeah, no, that would drive me crazy.
Yeah, so that's a little frustrating. So because of that, I think and most of my clients are creative, so they tend to have Macs, so we're kind of moving over to mostly using Mac now that it has all of the features that it didn't used to have.
Yeah.
That's nice. And I keep all of my files on the Mac side of things. I just log into Windows when I have to. All the tax preparation that I do is Windows.
Okay.
And it looks like MS-DOS. Like, it's the world's worst. They just don't make nice programs for accountants.
Right. Yeah.
So if anyone wants to make a nice program for an accountant, I would buy it.
Get in touch, yeah. You know, I remember when I switched to a Mac, I was a PC person for a long time for probably different reasons. But when I switched to Mac, it was a while back, and it was, you know, there's a little bit of, like, cognitive effort and getting used to the way things work differently. I think that's probably gotten easier. But at the same time, for a bookkeeper to switch also seems like it comes with, like, additional challenges. And especially because you're doing a lot of, like, offsite work, mm-hmm. you know, from, we'll call it the farm. I just enjoy calling and imagining that you, like, live on a farm, like the one in Wizard of Oz, but with a tornado shelter, even though we never get tornadoes here.
We hide underground sometimes.
Yeah, just for fun. Certain parties. But are there certain, like, tools or services you use to collaborate with people, like Dropbox, for instance?
Yep, I use Dropbox a lot. Google Drive mm-hmm. has been actually really helpful. It takes some... We've been able to host a QuickBooks file on Google Drive and both be able to access that, which is this is the first, you couldn't do that last year even.
Right.
So there's, you know, some bugs in it still, but it works pretty well as long as, you know, you can't both be in the file at the same time.
So it's kind of like file sharing, kind of like Dropbox,
but
you can,
exactly.
Interesting.
So that's been good. And we do a lot of Google Docs just because everybody can access them and share them. Dropbox, but that's pretty much it. The biggest problem I have is, like, if I send someone a QuickBooks file and they forget to restore it and use an old version, that's probably the biggest bug in my system in figuring out a better way. It would be nice to share files better, and that QuickBooks makes it hard for you. They don't want you to share. They want you to pay extra, like a lot more money to do that. So
right. I mean, like, is this like a thing where you're supposed to have an accounting copy license or something like that? Or?
Well, a multi-user license.
Okay.
Yeah, and they get spammed.
Then
they don't really work that well. It works for people who are all in one office together, you know, but not for people working remotely. And there's QuickBooks Online, but it's the ugliest program and least user friendly. I think that it'll improve as years go by because more people are going to want it and they'll make it better. But right now it's pretty crappy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember one business that I worked with set up that multi-user QuickBooks, but I gotta say, man, they still had all kind of problems with that.
QuickBooks,
it's just like,
sucks.
Oh yeah, it does. Yeah.
But it's the best, you know, it's kind of the only option out there, and it's the industry standard. So, like, your tax preparer can import that information straight into their tax software. That's what they want to see.
Yeah, certainly.
So,
tell me about making apple cider.
Ooh, that was fun. We did that last year. Yeah.
I know. You posted a lot of photos of that one.
That was super fun. A friend of ours in Portland bought a very small apple press. I mean, it's not that small. We made a lot of apple cider from it. And we had a couple of cider parties where people would come, and it's, you know, kind of laborious. Like, you wouldn't want to be alone doing this because you'd be sore and tired and grumpy. But with a big group of people, it was really fun. So we have some apples on our property. Our neighbors have apples. And so everybody just gathered up all the apples that we could find and stopped on the side of the road and picked more and, you know, just had oodles of apples. And you grind them all up, and then you put them all into the press, all ground up, and then you press it down and the cider comes out, and it was fun. And then we had a lot of fresh cider and then bottled it and made hard cider as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice. Do you have to take all the seeds out or peel them or all that
kind
of stuff?
No. Okay. You grind them up whole. And the tart apples were my favorite. Our landlord actually has two apple trees way up the hill that are cider apples, and they're very small, kind of like crab apples, a little bigger than crab apples, but real tart. Like, they're not real good to just take a bite out of and eat them. And those made my favorite cider. But you grind them up whole, and then when you press them, none of that stuff comes out. It's just just the juice comes out. So, and it was fun to get all of the, you know, the big bottles and adding the yeast and watching the science experiment happen in your dining room.
So how do you make it into hard cider? Is it?
So you put it in the big, God, they have a name. I don't know what they are, but they're, you know, those big jugs, and you put them into those and you add, we did a handful of different kinds. You can add yeast. So we added champagne yeast to one. You can get it at like a brewing supply store. And then there's ale yeast. Or there's natural yeasts that are just on, you know, that exist in the apples. So we did three different kinds. We did the champagne yeast, the ale yeast, and then just no added yeast. And the no added yeast took a lot longer to get to the red. So you have this little, I don't know what any of the stuff is called.
I can see your hands. Listeners will be wondering that.
They'll be confused. You have a little like thing that sticks on the top of the bottle and the air bubbles escape through it.
Uh-huh.
And so you know when it's ready for bottling when the air bubbles are at a certain distance apart. So it bubbles really fast for a while, and then when it slows down to like...
It's like putting popcorn in the microwave.
Yeah, you wait. You just, you bottle it up, you wait.
Okay. So did you have a favorite yeast?
I think I liked the champagne yeast one the best. It was...
The flavors were pretty distinct in that?
Well, I think the difference... And I'm not sure if it was the yeast or if it was the apples, because that was the one that had those little cider apples. So that batch was my favorite.
Yeah.
And all of it was pretty good, but I thought that batch was like as good as anything that I would have bought in the store.
So is there any way you can tell like how strong that it is without just drinking a lot and seeing how drunk you get, kind of a thing?
I think that there is, but we just went the second route.
Okay. The second, yeah. Hands-on experiment.
Yeah.
So have you done anything else like that? Have you tried making like wine or anything?
No, we haven't. Okay. We're going to try to do beer, but that, oh man, I mean, you start looking at like people that make beer. It's a wild world out there.
People get pretty serious about that.
Super serious.
Yeah.
But we're going to give it a shot. Wine would be, I don't know. I don't know anything about it. Cider is, I felt really simple. Like it was a good place to start trying to do making your own alcohol because it was just really simple. You know, you just put it in a bottle and wait.
You got all these apples. I mean, one year Candace made, we had a pear tree in our yard, and she made something in a jar, pear jam, I don't know. And that was really nice. But we don't really keep up on the pear tree, so it hasn't borne the fruit like it did that one year.
Oh, yeah.
I think we just got lucky that year.
Yeah.
You got to really get on it. You got to get up there and take care of that tree.
Prune it.
And it's probably a bad sign that it's kind of like half covered in moss.
That's probably not good.
No, it's probably not good. It's it's all a question of priorities. Like this was before we had kids.
Right.
Now we have kids, the tree's gonna have to wait.
Yeah.
or maybe we'll hire someone to come in and take care of it because I can't even.
There you go.
This might have been the year when it turned out good, but like a friend came over and like he was like really drunk and he climbed like the whole tree and like pruned it. He was up there for like 2 hours in the dark.
You should invite him over again.
I know I should.
Yeah, just call him up and see what he's doing.
Yeah, I should. I haven't talked to him lately. He lives farther away from here than you.
Oh.
He lives in like kind of in Yahats.
Okay.
So
yeah,
we don't see each other a lot, unfortunately, but. Yeah. But yeah, he comes over and be like, hey, let's go out back and drink and you can climb the tree and prune it. That'd be awesome.
You just have like a six pack and like the pruning shears.
Why is that ladder happens there? Oh, no reason. I just thought you might want to play on the ladder by the tree.
With these pruning shears. And
That's right. Well, cool. Well, thanks for talking to me. Mm-hmm. Where can people... follow you online? Is there like a, do you like to tell people about your Twitter or Instagram or anything like that?
I do Instagram and I'm Marian Rose Lucas.
Okay.
And then my business website is magnoliamgmt.com.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks, Marian.
Thank you.
Hello, Dan.
Hello, Ray.
How the hell are you, my friend? It's been a while.
Indeed. I'm healthier than I was last Monday.
That's good, yeah. You were usurped.
I ate saltines by choice yesterday, not out of necessity.
Yeah, that's always no fun. So listen, Dan. this crazy idea.
Listening. Okay.
My idea was that instead of doing this album thing that we pick randomly from a book,
full of fail.
Yeah. Instead, we do something that we're passionate about. I'm a passion fan. In this case,
you've liked passion on Facebook.
In this case, we would just take turns picking a song that we really like. Just one track, rant about it for like 10 minutes, and leave it up to listeners to not have to hunt down and purchase an entire rare album, but just click on a link. Just that simple. So, little backstory on... So I decided to go first because we did the coin flip this morning. I watched that Big Star documentary. I think it's called Nothing Can Hurt Me Now or something. And we talked about that. You know, I'm not gonna go there. But I became interested in... I heard a brief snippet of something that Alex Chilton of Big Star had done in his solo career. It turns out it was his first solo album after Big Star. I think he got a little disillusioned after that band kind of fell apart, self-destructed, and then I think he got really into punk and sort of saw it as a direction that he could get behind, I guess. So his first solo album after that was called, like, Flies on Sherbert, and it's a piece of shit. It's really bad. It's total crap. It's so awful.
I've been listening to it. Yeah. I kind of like it.
Yeah, it's okay. Okay, so compared to, like, let's say Big Star's first album, it's charming in the sense of, like, you know, honestly, and kind of like, well, you compared it to Jonathan Richman at a point. I would even almost compare it to how some artists in the 60s only had like one shot at recording. Like Dylan never liked to do more than one take if he could help it. And a lot of his songs are like, you know, he would burst out laughing or whatever. But this is kind of taken to an extreme. Like, it seems as though like he had even the producer who didn't really know how to play guitar, play the guitar.
There's a great quote on the Wikipedia page where he's just like, who was the producer?
The name is really familiar.
Jim Dickinson.
Yeah.
And he's like, Dickinson affirmed that Chilton consciously wanted the musicianship to be sloppy. Blah, blah, blah. And there's a... Oh, I'm missing it.
So you, but play like you're 14 years old.
You play like you're 14 years old. And he's like, yep, that's what I want.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reviews were, you know, like... slipshod, boorish, a small masterpiece of crudity... Well, that was actually the good review. You know, I now say, like, the track that I had heard a snippet of that I found is, like, in the middle of the second side. So, I honestly, if I were a music critic, I would never have made it that far.
Mm-hmm.
But, so, the song, I don't even have, it's called Hey Little Child. It might be a cover, I'm not even sure. But, it's great. It does have, like, that sort of vocal, like...
It's not.
Not great?
Not a cover.
Sorry. Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. That makes sense. It really does sound like it's one take. It's very much like... The first time I heard it, I couldn't... not only did it seem like the first take, but it seemed like the first attempt at a take. Like, the first rehearsal. Like, he kind of like... just pounded on the table and sang it really loud, and the rest of the guys were like, okay, well, let's do it. Like, it was very, very sloppy, but, you know, honestly, I'll tell you, the more I hear it, the more it starts to sound like it has structure. Like, at some point, it dawned on me there actually is a verse and a chorus, and the drum parts are slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
And his, just the kind of the throwaway style of him singing the lyrics... I like a lot.
His vocal delivery is very David Byrne.
Yeah.
To me, like, it sounds very much like early Talking Heads. And the musicality of the song does too. Like, if you just took like that rigid structure of all good Talking Head songs, like, they're kind of like scaffolded.
There's also seems to be a new wave influence in the vocals, like that, where it's like, oh, oh, oh. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I don't even understand where that would come from, because it sounds like he's trying to do punk, but it's almost like that's what, hearing that made me want to listen to that Wire again, because yeah. It kind of is like somewhere between punk and new wave. But in this case, it also has that really weird, like, this was around the time when he was, I think, maybe producing The Cramps, like produced their first album or something. Mm-hmm. It was right around 79 mm-hmm. when this is, or 78 when this is recorded.
And this was recorded right after Sister Lovers. And
when was that?
That came out in 78.
Oh.
I think it was recorded a little bit earlier.
Okay, interesting.
But that also sort of has that like sloppy, we do not care what's yeah. happening on tape.
Yeah.
We yeah, are doing this so. Out of obligation only.
Yeah.
But here's a gorgeous cover of Nico. Or like,
and know. that was Jim Dickinson too, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, even like there's so many obvious mistakes. Like at some point, the person who's playing the guitar kind of strikes it accidentally with his fist, I think, and it just does this random distortion that like no professional guitarist would ever do. It must have been when Jim was playing the guitar. It just sounds like a complete amateur kind of punt. But and in some sense, it almost reminds me of that story that I think we mentioned a few months ago on the show about how the keyboard player who ended up playing on like a Rolling Stone right, was yeah. not, I mean, he was a professional musician, but he didn't play keyboard. And he just kind of found this riff and it was like, great, just play that riff. Because it kind of feels like that in this song. Like there's kind of this riff that the guitarist kind of keeps falling back on. And the sort of the rhythm guitar part is it's interesting sort of sequence of chords that kind of seem to go up the scale but kind of just are very choppy. It's nice. It's a total gem. I was in I don't know if I told you this or just said it on Twitter, and I feel like I've told everyone, but I stopped to get a beer at this place that's kind of on the way home, and there's kind of a hipster there. I can make fun of him because I keep telling him to listen to the podcast. He never will, so let's make fun of him on the podcast. But he was I wanted to tell him about this track because I thought he would like it. It's another kind of thing. I was like, well, okay. So you know Big Star, right? And he was like, sounds kind of familiar. I was like, whoa.
You lose your skinny jeans right there, sir.
I know. Like, what are you? Dude, just go get a haircut. I don't... You've not heard of Big Star. Like, not... It, for the average Joe on the street, no reason you would have heard a Big Star.
Sure.
But if you want to come across as a hipster and you haven't heard Big Star, it's like being a kind of a hipster not having heard, I don't know,
the Pixies?
Yeah, something like that. Something
like something seminal and yeah. like necessary.
Yeah, so that was a weird moment. I was just like, you need to just, I mean, back to the basics. I don't know.
Just quick aside.
Yeah.
That the album that the song comes off of also has a cover of Boogie Shoes.
Right, right, right.
That I love.
Oh, well, you need to get this album. I mean,
I think I do. I like things that are broken and sloppy, and this is all sorts of broken and sloppy.
I think it's better than the third Big Star album. I'm going to say that.
Mm.
It's more accessible. I mean, it starts with a cover of Boogie Shoes. You know, there's some really bad stuff on it, but I would say all in all, it's not, as one critic said, on the short list for the worst album of all time. Definitely not. I'd say there has a lot going for it. It was kind of like it sounds like a artist who really wanted to break out of the rut he was in and do something in a completely different direction. It kind of sounds like a punk and new wave mixed with like the Memphis kind of sound.
Yeah, you can definitely tell that he'd been hanging around in the Bowery since Big Star broke up.
Yeah, it's kind of some of the vocal affectations of like, you know, like the Clash or something, you know, too.
Mm-hmm.
I just think I would have loved to have heard this album if it just
had a better producer and just a slight bit more effort put into it.
I don't think you can blame the producer. I think,
no. Yeah, he was, that's true.
I think he would have liked it if the album had a better yeah, producer as well.
Yeah, yeah. Chilton was a loose cannon at this point. Did you ever listen to his like 1970 album?
Like Between the Box Tops and Big Star or something? No.
I think I sent you a track from that at one point. It was only finally released in 96. So that was... So technically this was his first release solo album, but he did like try to record a solo album before Big Star. It's interesting to listen to. It's got covers of like, you know, like Honky Tonk Women and stuff. He's like trying to be kind of a country singer. I remember playing it for you thinking, oh, you like pedal steel, you'll love this. And there's no pedal steel.
Oh, that's that album. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Had nothing to do with what I said it did, but it seemed like a good release anyway.
Right. I love like these random quotes from Chilton that show up like regarding this album. He's like, my life was on the skids and flies like flies on sherbet was a summation of that period. I like that record a lot. Like, but like about 13, like probably his most famous song, right?
Yeah.
He once said, I was still learning to write and stuff. Like, yeah, that's probably the best response to that. Yeah. That's what the song's about. Like, this beautiful encapsulation of adolescence. Whatever.
What is 13 on?
It's on the first Big Star album.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
There was like I actually wrote an essay about this a lot, like published an essay about this a number of years ago. But there was like this rumor about 13 that I kept hearing from different people, like different parts of the world. Like, oh yeah, he wrote it when he was 13. Like, no, he didn't. He was, you know, wrote it for that record. But it has that feeling, like it could be it. There's like nothing to it, and the lyrics are really simple, and the rhymes are big and obvious, and like, yeah.
Well, you know, Jackson Browne wrote Doctor My Eyes when he was 16.
Did he really?